Well, greetings, brethren. So good to see everyone. It's a blessing. I think we can appreciate the blessing that it is when we stop and think what this day means to God the Father, what this day means to Jesus Christ, to so many of our friends and even relatives. Today is just another day, another work day, and they're oblivious to the fact that God has a great plan that he's working out in a few, an extreme few people on this entire earth. And it's nothing for us to boast about. It's nothing for us to be arrogant about. It should be with deep humility that we realize that God the Father has, in his graciousness and his love, singled us out for what we are going through. Yes, it's difficult, and sometimes it's very hard. You know, we are human. We're sold under sin. And yet, God, in his loving kindness, his compassion, he is guiding us and leading us. I'd like to go into an offertory message that I've entitled, We Give Thanks. And it's about how appreciative we should be. You can just put this in your notes. We're not going to turn there. But in Deuteronomy 16 and verse 16, it's one of the places where God tells us that three times in a year we're to assemble. And our minds might go, well, we're told more than three. You know, there's seven holy days, and then there's some other days like Passover that has a different emphasis than the other days. What God's speaking about is three times in a year, three seasons in a year. And I've wondered why that might be. Let me have you turn over to 1 Samuel 25, and we'll talk about this for just a little bit. But I believe those three seasons in a year are more like the seasons that people would have spoken of when they were a little bit closer to the elements, a little bit closer to the soil, a little bit closer to the earth than we are today. Today, many of us live in towns and cities, and the roads are paved, and we hardly ever see the dirt except in a faraway field. You know, we find our vegetable and our fruit at, you know, at the grocery store and not on the trees, and we seldom think of rain in due season, and is the fruit filling out, and is it ripe, and is it time to harvest? But times for much of the world were not like that. And when God was giving his instruction, people were a lot closer to the animals and closer to the soil and closer to the earth. I always enjoy going back and imagining what it was like when God was dealing directly with certain peoples, as he is today, but when the Old Testament was written. And I found an example here that I'd like to touch on in 1 Samuel 25. And just to kind of bring you up to speed on what was going on, remember David, before he was King David, he had interfaced with Saul, and he'd had some problems, and things had gotten too hot in town, and he had to go out in what we would call the countryside, and he had a band of men, and he was busy, and he was protecting the Israelites. Very little has changed in modern-day Israel and Palestine. You know, they still have a problem with enemies on all sides. But in David's day, there were roving gangs that would come in, and they would literally wait until the peaches were ripe and the harvest was full. That's when the raiders would come in. And even though the farmers and God's people had worked for months and months preparing the soil, putting out the crops, pruning the trees and everything, just about the time it's time for the harvest, they would come in and just scoop everything up. And so David had, as it were, a militia of men. And he was going around, and he was somewhat of a raiding party in reverse, dealing with those that would come in and rob the children of God. Now, not everybody was pleased with what David was doing. There are always people that are selfish, that won't pay their taxes, won't be a part of society, want it all for themselves. There are always the evil and the foolish. Well, there was this man, and his name was Nabal. And Nabal was such a man. And Nabal's name means he is a fool, a foolish man. I don't know if his name came first or the meaning came first, but maybe it's kind of like our word, timid, you know, from Timothy, know, it's come into play because of the name. I don't know how it came about with Nabal, but David, in his carnal nature, was so upset with Nabal that he was about to wipe him off the face of the earth. David and his men had sacrificed. They'd gone cold and hungry and without. And it was customary and it was understood that when you had saved somebody's whole farm, you know, from being devastated, that they would help you in your mission to protect all the surrounding property owners and their crops and everything. And so David was just about to deal with Nabal in a very harsh way, which would have been against God's law. It would have ruined David's reputation and everything, but David felt it needs to be done. But Abigail rises to the occasion. She is the wife of Nabal, and she realizes that, you know, push has come to shove. We're about to have a crisis of immense proportion. Nabal's going to be killed. The household's going to be wiped out. You know, that it was as though they were enemies of Israel as well. Abigail, one of my favorite people in the Bible, by the way, but she was a lady of a great deal of forethought and insight and preparation. And we'll take just a little flash photograph of what the culture was like in those days and just look at the produce that had been prepared, set aside, and set in store for the family. And the family household was large. Many servants, many family members, many animals. You didn't go to Walmart in December and get more of what you need. You did it yourself, and you did it coming into the fall holy days. But you started in the spring with the barley harvest. And then, not only the barley harvest, that you could be very thankful for, because, you know, it was the winter wheat, or the winter barley, actually, that was coming to fruition about this time of the year. You notice how everything's starting to get green. That was the first crop. That's why when we read about the barley, we know it's the springtime, spring holy days. That's one of the seasons when God said, bring an offering unto me. Then there was the summer harvest. Summer in its abundance, when everything is blooming, everything is growing, everything is producing. You know, the pear trees get so loaded that the branches are breaking out of the trees, and sometimes you even have to get an early harvest of unripe fruit, maybe make wine out of it or preserves or something. But they were very adept at taking of the land. But that would be another time when God would say, bring an offering to me. At the Feast of Weeks, at what we would call Pentecost today. And then there was the final feast and great harvest in the fall when the wheat and the trees and everything's coming to the full. So that's why God has three seasons. There's not a lot to collect in February. God wouldn't say you've got anything left over. The people are trying to stretch February into March and April to when the crops come in. But I thought it would be interesting to go to 1 Samuel chapter 25, and let's look at what Abigail takes of her abundance from her storehouse and gives to David and his men who are protecting everybody. 1 Samuel 25 and verse 18. Then Abigail made haste. She wants to cut David off before he does so much damage. She took 200 loaves. Now right there we learn some things. You know, when I buy a loaf of bread, I don't want to buy too many loaves, because a loaf of bread's not good for that long. You know, you go out 2-3 weeks, and a loaf of bread can start to get pretty crusty and hard and dry it up. But she gives them 200 loaves. I guess when I see things like this, that maybe when the bread is cooked and it has the hard crust on the outside, they might have had tricks that we don't know about today. Maybe they rub it down with olive oil, you know, and like preserve the moisture on the inside and kept the texture of the outside, you know, so that it's chewy and moist. I don't know. I'm just throwing that in. It's not in the scripture. I just think 200 loaves of bread would get dry and crusty before very long. And 2 bottles of wine. That's not very much for a gang of men, 2 bottles of wine. You know what kind of bottles these were? These were those great big jugs that it takes 2 men to pick up and load onto a donkey. I guess that they were at least 25 gallons apiece. I don't know, but this isn't talking about what we call a bottle of wine. This is talking about one of those large containers of wine. and five sheep ready dressed. Now, that's smart. That would probably feed them for 2-3 days, but you can't kill sheep way, way ahead of time. And one of the things that works so good is if you're going to slaughter an animal, he stays fresh until the day you slaughter. I don't think there was a lot of slaughtering ahead of time. So five sheep seems like a small amount of meat right there. Five measures of parched corn. That, I have no way of knowing how much that is a measure of what we would call a bushel today. It was sizable, and the fact that it's measures of grain, it's going to need to be refined and baked later. So that's bread for down the road. She took 100 clusters of raisins. How big would you suppose a cluster or a bunch of raisins would be? They must have had some way of, you know, having a little mold or something and packing them down and wrapping them with some kind of twine or something. But they knew, you know, what wouldn't sour and what wouldn't dry out, and through experimenting, everybody would know what a cluster of raisins would be, dried grapes. 200 cakes of figs, they must have done something like that. And they laid them on these donkeys. So these were a couple of donkey loads of food. Now, that's interesting that we can see that was the kind of food that they have. Wasn't all nice and packaged like we have it today. But it kind of gives you just a microcosm glance at what was going on back then. Because this, you know, was just normal fare for those people in those days. That's what they would have given in offering. They would have either given of their abundance of their fruit or their vegetables or their wine or their animals or something like that. There is the case to be made that some of them would have given money, but not all commerce in trade was done in money in those days. That's what they were thankful for. That's what they were offering. I'd like to ask the question now. Let's get serious, because those are interesting points. That's not what our faith is about. Our faith is about our dealings with God. What is it that we are to be thankful for? And I asked the young people before services today, I told them, I don't really remember what I was thankful for, you know, when I was a young man, a young person. And the children were thankful for their parents. That's entirely proper. In fact, it's one of the commandments. They were thankful for family and friends. We can't give of our family. We can't give of our friends. But God is pleased when we are thankful for family. And as I asked them and prodded them a little bit more, they were thankful for protection. I wrote down sustenance, but the phrase they use, everything I need to live is provided by my parents. Instruction. Parents guide young people. Parents look out for them. Make sure that their minds are filled with godly things rather than the things of this world. One of the answers that I got is being thankful for the animals and the flowers. And right in that same category, understanding of the Bible. I thought that's good. I like that's linked all together. You know, when we see God's beautiful creation, to think about the fact that we, of all the people on the face of the earth, have had our minds opened up to where we can look into God's Word and begin, and not don't ever think we know it all, but we can begin to understand. We can begin to have our mind and our understanding opened. And that's a wonderful thing. Another answer that I got from the young people was the togetherness of the brethren. And as someone mentioned just a day or two ago, Mr. Armstrong's mother, I believe it was, her favorite scripture was, you know, that they could dwell together in unity from Psalms. It is a wonderful thing when we can get together, and it helps us through the rest of the year to see each other in our mind's eye, so that when we're on the phone or communicating with each other, whether it's by email or internet or however good, we have a very clear picture of each other in our mind. We don't have to see each other eye to eye to appreciate that fellowship. So, brethren, what are we thankful for? I guess our calling would be right at the top. We could be out there like all of our friends and neighbors today, you know, pumping gas and at work or doing whatever we would do and be oblivious to what God is doing. And yet God, in his tenderness and his giving, has opened our mind that we can see that today is a day that tells us to come out of that world and to be separate and to be a part of what God has and to be a different people. Our calling is beyond measure when we think about how precious it is. And we too can look at God's creation that's really getting roughed up right now and really getting ruined. I'm speaking about the wars and insurrection and the rebelliousness that's going on around the world that's flaming up more and more each day, and the earth is being ruined. And the scriptures talk about the earth being ruined. Rather than dwell on that, let's think of it in its beauty, as it was when God made it, in its perfection, with the climates and the animals and the herbs and the food that were very good, God says, for our abundance and our health and our growth, so that we might become the children of God. And even though we're in a rough spot right now, we are praying, thy kingdom come, so that God's kingdom is ushered in, so that at the end of that millennium, we will be back at that Garden of Eden stage, not just in that area where God had the Garden of Eden, but the entire world will be a veritable garden. We can be thankful for that right now, as though it were. As beautiful as these flowers are, what about when the world is blossoming in beauty? And not just the flowers, not just the nature, not just the animals, but men's hearts are beautiful in love and service and caring towards one another. So let's be thankful for the peace that we have in this rabid world that we're in right now. Let's thank God for the relationship that he has made possible for us, that Jesus Christ has made possible by his death that we have seen this week, that we were reconciled to the Father. Our past was wiped out. We have so much to be thankful for. So I just wanted to bring a message of we give thanks and talk about that a little bit. We will now have special offertory music. It's a beautiful piece. It's soft, and it's a very enjoyable piece. It takes a few minutes. Just sit back, relax. It's entitled Remember Your Creators, performed by the Ambassador Chorale. It was performed in the Ambassador at a time when the church was in a wide place and things were a little bit smoother than they are today, but I feel that we're closer to the truth, and, you know, when we're going through growing pains, there's some hurt. But let's remember our Creator as we take up the offering.